token as a. It's almost the same as in Peter's talk in 2 weeks ago. But I hope you will not be disappointed. I cannot relate this to quantum electron gravity lenses. Quantum from back is you can look at it from many different points of view. And I have my own point that for me they are rather study of PDE, it's part of PDE. It's have a very strong relation to complex analysis, geometry, and that kind of thing. So, even if there are strong relations, then I would like to point this PDE connector throughout my talk. And so, first question is then that how are quasi-conformal mappings related to the conformals, the random structures we are studying in the version? So the point here, and this is my point of view, is that quasi-conformal mappings, they are the method to produce complex structures. And it's the most general way to produce complex structures. And the question is then, okay, how do you produce complex structures by PDE, and the answer is that by uniqueness and existence of solutions, that's the way one should look at this. Okay, so this is our statement of philosophy, so what does it mean in practice? So I'll first describe the examples, and then we illustrate this point of view. And then I go to suppose you have some homeomorphism in the real life, or that is, or the circle. And suppose you want to glue two half space together by this homeomorphism. So there's one upper half where the sphere and the lower half, and then you want to glue them together. This is also very known construction. And now what you want to do is you want to give a complex structure for it. And of course, how do you give the complex structure? So you could also look at it from point of view Hamming measure. Suppose the same upper half plane as you do a usual Hamming measure. So here the Hamming class is the probability of Brownian motion is the T. And then you would like to give a structure of the lower half plane so that the probability in the Z E is now given by H of T, not just the usual Hamming measure. So the question is, how do you build up this? And if you think about this little line, you see that it's equivalent to the following problem. That you want to find two conformal mappings. One that's called F plus from the upper half plane, and it's mapped to a component of the Tonak curve, gamma. And then there's other problem at the F minus, it's the lower part, or maybe in the complement part. Good. And what you want to do, so here the harmonic measure is of course the pullback of F plus. Well, the pullback of the harmonic measure by F plus is the length of the real line, similar to F minus. So therefore, the question comes is that given this homeomorphism in the real line, can you represent it this way? That it's a composition of two conformal mappings. Now, one makes a sovereignty or so ethnic closely defines the extent of the boundary, so they're both defined on the curve, or the inverses are both defined on the curve. And therefore, the ace is well defined. So given this homomorphism of the real life, how do you find this control then? Okay, and the answer is that you solve a PDE.
So, how do you solve the PDE?
So, first, let's take the math homomorphism of the real line and extend it one way or the other as a homomorphism of the whole place. But this is easy to do. There are limited ways to do it. And then, if you do it in a more or less reasonable way, the solution satisfies this equation. This is the Bernoulli equation. That will be the theme of this talk to study this equation. Now, if you look at this for the first time, it looks strange. Why this equation?
And sorry, is mu is a parameter or
it's a function, complex.
It's a function.
Function, yeah. And okay, but the question: how do you get this mu? And then the reason is simple that if you write your Jacobian mapping H in complex notation, so it's just the B of H squared minus B part of H squared. Now suppose your map H is a diffeomorphism in the upper half plane and in the complement of the real line, then it's positive. And therefore, you have that the D bar, let's say assume that H is preserving different offsets of the real line. Then the second term is positive point wise. And then you see that the D bar of H is less than the H. So this, you can just define mu by this rule. So there's nothing in the most strange in that. Of course, then the matter comes with how degenerate the mu is. I mean, problems come when the Jacobian is close to zero. And that's a subtle point, and you come to that a little bit later. But so, this equation, it just comes, it must give the function h, then you have the equation.
Okay, but then to PDE. So, what you do is this, that the
okay, so before we go to the PDE, notice that suppose mu is zero in some part of the plane, then the D bar of H is zero, that means H is analytic mapping. If it's homomorphism, then it's conformal. So we want to have conformal mappings, we make mu equal to zero. So suppose we make now mu equal to zero in the upper half plane. But construct function f plus. Then what we like to have is a solution of this equation where so we keep the old mu in the lower half plane and make it zero in the upper half plane. And now we have the PDE. Now assuming that we can solve this equation. So now we need a theory. Now assuming that we can solve the equation, then we can do the welding.
Namely,
it is easy to see that, okay, suppose you have a solution of the Bernoulli equation and you compose it, post-compose it with an analytic function. Because it's a complex linear, also the composition will be satisfied by the same equation, so there's no problem there. But it goes the other way around too, that if you have a solution of this equation with the same mu, then the two functions are obtained by up to a conformal mapping. That's the uniqueness part of the Bernoulli equation. So in the upper half plane, in the lower half plane, maybe put the picture a bit lower. So in the lower half plane, we keep the mu, so h and function f plus, assuming that they exist, they have the same dilatation, therefore they differ by a function f minus which is conformal. And now we have obtained the two conformal mappings, and then we have the vector.
Somehow missed something. How did we get, by the time we get to the bottom third of the transparency, how do we produce the H?
No, H was the, we start with the H and then we extend it to some, just take some extension from the line to the whole plane. So that's given, so this comes easy.
So but that's, I see, so that's automatically.
This comes just by take more or less any extension. And then you have the coefficient from this extension. And then we start to play. We take this coefficient, modify a little bit, and then solve the new equation.
So the big H was never the problem?
That's never the problem. So the question is that, do we have the existence, do we have a solution for this equation, and is the solution unique? And if you have these two conditions, then we have the value. And it's actually if and only if. We have the value if and only if we have the uniqueness. I mean, we have unique welding of the Mergers transformation, if and only if we have the uniqueness and existence for the belt transformation. So it's just a. It's the problem is now described in a setting where we have machinery and we can solve the questions. Okay. So this shows how the solving PDEs gives you complex structures. And now if you want to produce random curves, I mean this is a picture perhaps tries to look like random. So then what do you do? There are two ways. You could for instance take this random homeomorphism, that's what Peter was doing 2 weeks ago. So you have random homeomorphism, then you do the procedure here. Then you have a random curve. Or you could do other way, you could also, let's take this mu and assume that you can solve the equation. Then you have these two conformal mappings and then you have your curve. So that's a bit different point of view. And Stefan is probably going to say something about this point of view. So you can start directly with the mu. So you then you would have a random view and let it go. And they okay, this post-conformal maps, they arise in also other conditions. So the Kenyon, you studied the height fluctuation in your climate model. And then the fluctuation come from a Gaussian free field, but not in the standard structure. So they arise every now and then in natural manner, and especially when you try to produce complex structures, random conformal mappings and things like that. Okay, so what we start to do is that we start to look at more generally. We somehow so this somehow asked that we should develop the theory of the Bertram equation or the this mapping where we use them. And there should be many related connections with this theory because it has been developed. Yeah, sure.
The original question, did you call it right?
No, it's not unique. Make a choice is the choice of this H. I mean, how to extend, take out the Bernoulli extension or Duarte or tension gain. I mean, and then you have the mu. It's like a tight rod theory. I mean, it's only the up to the boundary mappings. Okay, then, yeah, but this is a tight rod theory. And that's a difficult. It's a non-linear question, so actually Teichmann theory is defined as the equivalence classes of mu's, which give the same. So that's it's just a formulated question. I don't think that's a nice. Okay, so what we like to do is study the Bentham equation with random mu, and that may be in a while discuss what it could be. But before we go there, let me just familiarize you with the terminology. So this actually, it's a PDE, or actually the real coordinates, it's a system of two functions. It's a system of PDEs. And it's anything precisely that the mu is part of the waveform one. It's uniformly anything, it is strictly part of the waveform one. And in this case, the solutions are called post-conformant. So that's where the name then comes from that system. And then we also, the last thing we discussed is conformatics, they map infinite ellipses to infinite disks to ellipses. I think the best way to look at this is this condition is called Poisson. So here you see that if you are on a circle, then the ratio here is 1. And this says that the ratio of the image is also plus 1. But this called works in all scales. And that's some other best way to look at it. So here I use the Peters Cartesian and so the best possible picture of a quasi-conformal mapping. So we know, from here we see that alias the new quasi-conformal mappings must be for us. So maybe we learned it from them, who knows. But so what is this? It's a quasi-circle. So it's a quasi-conformal mapping with the whole plane and mapping to this curve. So why is it quasi-conformal? Just have a look at this function here. I mean, the natural parametrization for this self-similar Cobbs curve is that it's satisfied that the ratios from the circle are roughly ratios on the curve. So no, there are no zero angles here, and so it's clearly the natural parameter satisfies this function. So it's good. It's also the way how you should view this. Okay, but then from the random point of view, probably is that all interesting random curves more or less more interesting with the degenerate elements. So that way we have to give up the uniform elements in it, and then things are more complicated. But maybe you can say something also in this case. Okay, so how would we look at the random quasi-conformal mappings? Well, first we need some way to define the random mu's, and this is the first case, and this is what we will study in this talk. So let's take a square lattice polynomial. It could be, of course, some other lattice, square lattice. And let's say side length of the square should be 2 to the power minus k. And then each of these squares, we put some random mu. So this is this psi jk, that's a graphics function of the disk. Here we put some random coefficient and we put the psi. Some random coefficient, which we so far we have to assume that they are independent. So we would like to have some correlations. But so far, okay. So, and we assume that they are also identical distributed and V0. But then we have to have some non uniform behavior. And there's a bump function. This is a deterministic bump function. It could look like support something like this. Yeah, and edit there.
Okay, so what would be the typical cases? So the typical case could be when this random, let's say, takes a value plus or minus one, plus or minus one half. You have the bounds be bounded away from one. Or you could have a, let's say, this kind of condition where you can degenerate, but not too strong. So it goes to one like it's normal Gaussian distribution.
So this little gate inside the pipe, so it blows up. I mean, you put this little pipe in each little square.
Yeah. And then, of course, worse is that when we take the case gate limit, the gate goes to infinity. What happens? Okay, so I think these are two typical natural choices. So what we can improve with the following result. Okay, here I just take all the difference of mu. And then we have to assume some decay. We can't go too strongly to one. And we assume that this we have this exponential decay. It's of course much bigger than the normal distribution of Gaussian behavior, but still we have to assume that. Almost surely, but for every case, we have a homeomorphic solution to the equation. So at least we have something to start. Then we can show that the gradients are L2 interval at this local. And this little bit later, the role of this condition. And then we have this normalization of it. We can conform to mu, we estimate it's compatible with property, so conform matrix with the FK. So this conformal matrix that we know as well. Okay, then after this we make the scale to infinity, and the result is that in the scale limit we have a deterministic scale. Deterministic limit. This for almost sure. And of course then the question comes, what is the deterministic limit? It's more difficult. So if you have the bump function just one, so suppose there's practically no, but just the okay, bump function is just the constant one. Then the B is symmetric, and therefore it follows that the limit is the identity. But we can also put some bump functions, since as a result we have a function which are not identity. But then it's much more difficult. It's it's more difficult to say what is the limit function. It's okay, so there's some work to be done here too. Okay, so of course the main point here is that the scale, we have to scale the scale most. Okay, then
so the scaling limit, you're still working a square in a sense, you don't have a scaling limit, dealing with a finite system, or?
Okay, so for each scale, we solve the equation. So we have a family of mappings. So for each scale, we have
to once you know, the larger domain is still going to be a square. I don't think that's, that's not important.
You're square. We take the last domain to be.
Boundary conditions on the boundaries.
Okay, the boundary condition is I mean, this is the boundary condition. So it's globally defined. It's defined to mu.
Mu is zero outside.
Mu is zero outside the disk. Okay, so this is I should really explain. But this is already supported in the disk. So it's debar is zero outside the disk, outside the square. There is a test analytic function that we normalized by this. So that's the boundary condition. Okay, so here's a picture how this
group. I think it's already drawn by David White from Seattle, a Stephen's student. But, okay, yeah. Here we have the views are either plus 1/2 or minus 1/2. And it's plus 1/2 when it's vertical and minus 1/2 when it's okay, but anyway, so here you see if you take a view which is plus 1/2 in the whole plane, then it's half and mapping the stretches. I think in the real axis it views positive and in the imaginary axis it views negative. And here we have positive stretching and negative stretching, and then it's randomly.
So that's it.
I'm wondering if this fact that you get convergence almost surely to the identity in the case where phi is always one is possibly related to the percolation properties of the lattice that you're using. The model, if you just have plus 1/2 or minus 1/2, the model is not critical as a percolation problem. Suppose you use the hexagon type. Expect to get the same result, or
I think so. I mean, the fact that you have that in the distance, it was assumed to be. I mean, they probably saw that the limit exists on the shore. I mean, it's easy to see that, assuming
that it has to be the identity, even if there's.
I mean, the way we build up
but even if there's long contours of plus or minus. Connecting
contours.
That's
yeah.
Not going to affect anything?
No, I think it's just. I was at the limit that it's. It is just. I just took a look at the explanation of it. It's a disturbed. Okay, I so how do you solve it? And then you see, from the way you solve it, it's easy to see. Okay. Let me get back to this a little bit later. Okay, but at one point I'd like to explain my emphasis is that why we took out the derivatives in the pool. That's a regularity for solutions PDE, but why do we care? Here's a bad example. So suppose you don't have L2 derivatives, so just assume you have weak L2 derivatives. Then you can have a mapping which just blows up point to a complement. So complement point is mapped to complement disk. And no solution to the corresponding equation is continuous. And now if you want to use this mapping to constant complex structures, I mean there's no I mean you can't do anything with these mappings. So mu is just a iterated at one point at the origin. Origin is just one, as well it's less than. So it's very nicely behaved except one point. Derivatives are almost greater than two and then empty phase. So it shows that there's no life outside L2. L2 is just a third space. And that also hints what might be this with Q. Okay, so we go to the
harmonic analysis to see how the solutions are constructed.
And we use the singular interval operator. It's well known in the classical form area. It's a beating clock in the two dimensions of the area. And that's the singular integral operator, the Bering transform. It takes the d part derivative to d derivative. And therefore, suppose we have a solution, then the operator relates the d and d part derivatives, and we have this equation that satisfies, which can be can then iterate, and we have the d part derivative. That's some of these iterated integrals. The function itself, then you can get by positive. So already here you see how the solutions are built, and so by taking the extra from here, you see that in the symmetric case, all these things vanish, and you get no special. Here suggests or hints what you should do. So first you have this series, so look at each term. Okay, each of these terms should converge in some way. And because we can take the positive transform, it's enough that this converges big, the kernel is here in LQ for LQ less than 2, so big convergence is enough for this term. And then what remains are these three dots, so you must take also these. So you have terms and the dots. So what you should do is that, for simplicity I take the bound function equal to 1. And it is not equal to 1, then the computer will become much, much more complicated. So we don't want to deal with that. So I just take the basic case. And so we have the mu, we have the random part, and here the support. And here's the function developed in the Slogan series. Okay, so what we have to do, we have to take elements of the Slogan series and so that this one is decreased in entry. And actually, because there are just quite a number of these views, it's going to decrease in entry and t between 1 and t. If you are in this uniform elliptic case, the usual possible properties, then this is it. We don't have to do anything else. But if the mu accelerates in the exponential speed, then we have to take care of the tail. And then we have to go down the tail for 0 uniform. Okay, so. Sure, please. Use the little bit of proof, so we have to build everything from the curve. So we have to actually give a new proof for this. So I'm lucky to when did I start? I will not give the full details. I just give a somehow sketch main parts for the arguments. Okay, so we want to solve the perturbative equation when the mu is given this structure. And some of the main, okay, the point difficult is that of course when you put the mu in this series, so you have many cross terms from each of these mu, so when we pick some mu. Some of okay, but also some of the chain that makes this combinatorial complicated. It turns out that the simplest way to solve this problem is to take an intermediate scale to the work with the intermediate scale. And that's our Q theorem. Sorry. So we have to show that this converts weakly to zero almost surely. First we do it, we show it in probability. We just take some dualic square and it's enough to solve the convergence of these. Okay, then we have the Q tilde here, then that we divide into intermediate squares. And we play with intermediate squares to take care of the sums. And then we solve the convergences by induction. Now, induction not in terms of the scale, but induction in terms of the Neumann series. So we have this in terms of the Neumann series, in terms of the order in the Neumann series. And of course, the first case when n is equal to 0, this goes to 0 by law of large numbers of surfaces. And then the intermediate case. So we assume that we have the weak convergences for when you have terms less than n. And that we do deal with this properties of the singular integral. Namely that if you have, if you look at different disjoint cubes, then the operator from one cube to the next one or other cube is compact operator. So that means that if you have the so suppose we develop this series, then if there's one term in the series where we have different cubes, then the mapping is compact and the weak converges becomes strong converges. And those terms go zero, so trivial. So it turns out that we do the developing. Only thing that really makes difficult is control is those terms where in the development we have all the time the same subsquare here. Every time the same subsquare in the development. Okay, so how do we do deal with this case? Well, here we use the probability of the fact that these are random variables. Identically distributed. And they are distributed in the same way as because of inner scale and how they have been started. Also, we use the symmetry of the situation, and here I skipped a little bit, but symmetry out of the mu that the expectation of the mean term is equal to zero. This is the whole for this bound function case, and that's the main thing about how to do this expectation function. Okay, but now once we have independent identical distributed variables, and there are so many of them, and we can take them over document, but then basically the same division goes there also. And then you can subdivide them, and then almost surely we don't go to zero. Then we can just this, take this perfect function and we have in the dual for this perfect function is called the dense subset of the dual.
Almost surely they go to zero exponentially.
Sorry?
Almost surely they go to zero exponentially.
Yeah, I think so, yes. Okay, so but I will discuss on at all the fluctuations. And here we have only some first terms calculated. It seems if you plot less correctly, you don't have correlation, you have some type of loss. That's it. It wouldn't be quite nice if you get some
so here we need a different argument.
So we want to show this, they've just been added to, almost sure. So the idea here is that, okay, we look at these sets where the mu's are bigger than 1 minus 2 over n. And of course, this is a random set, so for its case, it's a random. And then we have its complement. And now, of course, the problem is when mu is close to 1. So this is the problem set, this is a good set. Now, assume we are in a good set, f equals 5. So then we could iterate the Neumann series in this manner. And that's what says that when we take the element here, take this L2 norm. OK, now we're in a good set. So the mu here is already a little bit away from 1. So we can take it in front. Then we have the L2 norm of T as the next term, but T is isometry in L2. So we can get the term T also, and we have the next term in the series. Okay, but then we continue this. We get a little bit better estimate and so on. And when we multiply everything, we have term which is constant of L over 2. And the 2 is, of course, the same 2 as here. And so this good part, they converge nicely, but there's no problem. The problem is these bad parts. And what we do is we compare the bad, I mean the general terms with the good parts. And with a little bit similar ideas like here. In terms of the difference, you can write it in this way. This delta jk is the bad part, first part of the bad part, times the disturb the Neumann. Okay, so what should we do here? Maybe I forgot to write it on the... We have an eraser for... tested, you know, it would be great. So now we have mu. So again, we just use the progressive point. So we have here measure this set to power 1 minus 2 of t. And then we have the problem is this term here. But we know that the current operator is power in an LP. So then it's a norm, it's close to my basic harmonic analysis, Torrey theorem, it goes to 1 when P goes to 2. And now this less than exponential. So we can take here, this is less than exponential. Then we have J iterations.